You are listening to Thursday Night Talk on KHSU. This week, Brenda Starr is our host. As always, we welcome your calls. Please give us a call at 826-4805, or if you're out of the area, at 800-640-5911, and to our text line at 492-KHSU.
Good evening and welcome to Thursday Night Talk. I'm Brenda Starr and I'll be your host for the next hour. And we've already started talking here in the studio, so we're anxious for your calls too. Tonight's topic is the adult use of legalized marijuana. With the voters' approval of Prop 64 taking effect January 1st this year, there are many questions regarding this new legal recreation. My guests this evening are Mike Wilson, District 3 Humboldt County Supervisor, Mary Ellen Jerkovic.
That's
one thing I didn't ask her about. Jerkovic. From the Humboldt Patient Resource Center, Chris Oss. From Oregon, and we're so busy talking, I didn't get the name of his dispensary. Natalie DeLapp was supposed to be here from Humboldt County Growers Alliance. She wasn't feeling well, and we wish her well. If there's anybody from that perspective of the growers, feel free to give us a call. You can join in on the conversation. Your comments, feelings, questions, and concerns are welcome. Please call us here at the studio, 826-4805. The toll-free number is 800-640-5911. If you don't want to be on the air or even want to be anonymous, you can text us at 492-5478, and your message will be read on air. We welcome your calls. First, I'd like to just have people introduce themselves. Mike, start with you. Tell me just a little bit about it. I think you're homegrown, aren't you?
More or less, sure. Sure. I am a Humboldt County District 3 Supervisor here in Arcata, representing Arcata, Blue Lake, and up to Neyland and out to Manila. And let's see, I was raised here in Humboldt County. It's true, South Fork dropout. I grew up in Southern Humboldt, so certainly the issue of cannabis is something that I'm somewhat familiar with through my years. Have a degree in civil engineering and also in environmental engineering, and have been an environmental engineer for most of my adult career life until I took on this job as county supervisor. So there you go.
That's and you've been intro. On board for a year now, right?
Yep.
Congratulations. Just had your anniversary.
Yeah. Well, and I'm still there, so they haven't kicked me out yet.
That's a good sign, Mike. A good sign. And our guest from Oregon. Introduce yourself there, Chris.
My name is Chris. I own a dispensary in Salem, Oregon, longest continually operating dispensary in Oregon. And pretty much just down here for fun. Come down here for my vacation and check out how the industry is going down here.
Well, thank you for joining us this evening. And Mary Ellen.
My name is Mary Ellen Jerkovic, and I'm the director of the Humboldt Patient Resource Center, which is a dispensary in Arcata. We've been at this location since 1999, and I've been the director there for the past 12 years. We just became state permitted for recreational as well as medical.
I'd like to start out this evening probably with Mike in regards to Prop 64, because, you know, if we're going to go into anything with the government and voters, I'm going to ask Mike first. Prop 64's full name is the Control, Regulate, and Tax Adult Use of Marijuana Act. And the tax portion is not taken lightly. And when we were talking before we went on air, and Mike's like, well, nobody asks me about the taxes. But in regards to the cultivation.
Well, not the taxes at the consumer end.
Yes.
The taxes at the producer end, in terms of that is definitely a subject we talk about a lot.
And the cultivation tax.
Right.
Well, there's three taxes. There's the cultivation tax, which is $9.25 per dried ounce. And then also, I didn't know that they also tax leaves at a lesser tax, $2.75 for a dry leaf ounce. Excise tax, which is California tax, that's 15%. They tax gasoline, they tax alcohol that way. And then the sales tax, which that's where the slippery slope comes. It's like, if your town has a tax, then if your county has a tax, all those add up, your state and local.
Yeah, we have a tax, county tax for Measure S, and that's in the production end of things. So I think it's $3 a square foot indoor, $2 a square foot for mixed light, and $1 a square foot for outdoor production. And so there's, of course, just like with everything, people are asking, what are the real nuances of that? You know, how is that really applied on the ground? And that's continuously being negotiated, I guess, you know, with the planning department.
Well, it is kind of a work in process. So Measure S pertains to the costs that are paid by the dispensary owners?
No.
Or is that passed on to the consumer?
This is just an expense to the producers.
Just to the producers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
So if you're going to have an extraction plant, that would be a tax that would be on that plant?
I'm not
or
sure
are we talking
about Measure
S. Farmers?
I'm talking about mostly in the growing. And, you know, in many counties in California have their own taxes. So if you're in, I don't know, in Salinas, I think that whatever the county is there, it's $25 a square foot. So that there's variances in that. And I think it was originally proposed to be $10 a square foot in Humboldt County, but the Board of Supervisors, I wasn't on there, reduced it to, I think, $3 a square foot for indoor.
Yeah, I think they did have, it went on for a year or so, the debate about that. As an example, Harborside is in Oakland. And I remember the first day they had their first person going, selling $15 a gram, and then the total sale was $21.10. And in at Harborside in Oakland, you have the regular state sales tax is 6%. The Alameda County sales tax is 3.25%. State tax is 15%. And then you have the Oakland tax. So they have 34.25% tax on that, which has been yet another conversation that everybody's been having. One of the things that I really like having Chris here for is that Oregon has been doing this for a while. You've got some stories, and it seems like possibly all these taxes are still negotiable.
Well, I mean, Measure S was voted in by the voters of Humboldt County. It's not that negotiable from that perspective, just the details of the on-the-ground application. And that's money that's spent in the county, and we as supervisors have big public meetings to ask the citizens how they would like that money spent every year, and that influences basically where that money gets spent in our county. So, I mean, from my perspective, that's where you want your taxes to be, you know, and have that transparency where the tax is collected and people have a voice in how it gets spent, and then that's what happens. Part of what you're talking about is also local sales tax, and Humboldt County has a local sales tax. It's the same local sales tax that's on everything that's sold in Humboldt County. It's not just cannabis. It's cars or, you know, things like that. So, yeah.
Anyway. So then would it be up to the state to the only wiggle room would be the excise tax with the state, maybe having it be, I think it's more than alcohol.
I don't negotiate with the state on their taxes.
No, but I'm just saying that could be the only wiggle room there is in taxes would be with the excise tax.
I mean, I think the concern that people have with taxes at this level is, are you driving up the price of the product higher than the black market will compete with? And I think there was concerns about that in the past with cigarettes, and certainly there was some activity in black market cigarettes, but that is not such an issue so much anymore. And there was a time when that was an issue with alcohol too. And I think we're gonna just see how that adjusts. I mean, it's the balance between whether or not a black market, whether it's worth the risk of getting caught and going to jail selling a black market product or not. I mean, when cannabis was illegal, then the the risk was worth it for many, many people.
The reward was much higher.
Yeah, the reward was much higher. And so even with all these taxes, you know, even if you can sell it for, even if it costs a little bit more in the legal market than you can produce it in the illegal market, it still may not be worth, the differential may not be worth the effort in black market. And it's also becoming more difficult to produce black market. That will become technology, and the way enforcement on the black market is happening is very different than in the past. So in the past, it was about enforcement through the gun, through a sheriff's office. And now it's enforcement through code enforcement, which is, you know, it doesn't require a search warrant. It doesn't require a judge. It just requires a letter, you know, from the planning department saying, hey, the aerial surveys show that your property has these activities that are code violations. And unless you, abate those code violations, fines start at $10,000 a day per violation. And it's amazing, you know, under this regime, the way it's done now, people are much more afraid of a $10,000 a day fine than they are 10 years in jail. Yep. Because it's a lot easier to implement. And you don't need to drive up a driveway and spend a whole day with 20 people with guns to find it. It's purely a photograph from a satellite and a letter drawn up by an administrator sent in the mail. So it's just such a different way that we'll see enforcement of how, you know, it's just going, it may seem easy to be in the black market currently, but it's going to just become much harder and harder and harder as we move along. And it just, the rewards won't match the risk. I mean, that's the goal anyway. That's the direction.
Well, that's why some small farmers would say that it's not going to be worth their profit either.
Yeah. But,
and we shall see where that's going.
There's some heavy overhead with this.
Just wanted to, one of the things that happened today was that the Humboldt Growers Association, and Ezekiel Allen has been on the show before, they filed a lawsuit today to cap farm size. Unlimited stacking of licenses. So per Prop 64, they said it was clear that non-medical industry should be built around small and medium-sized businesses. So if you're stacking the licenses, so once again, that favors someone who's growing more, which changes the industry in a lot of parts of our county. So that is something that probably we'll be looking at and following those stories as this year goes on. But Mary Ellen, why don't you tell us what it was like on January 1st or 2nd when you opened up with this new world ahead of us?
Well, it was very sad because we weren't opened up. It was a very sad day. We were working on our state permitting because it takes time, and we, just because of the way things were going as far as the city of Arcata didn't really approve adult use until the 20th of December. So we waited, and it was fine. We were excited they did. We're not upset with them. But we definitely were not open because we had to turn in all of our paperwork to the state, which we put in on the 20th, and it took them till the 5th of January. So I just had my whole staff working. I have 20 employees. We all stayed at work and worked, and then we had someone waiting outside to talk to people about what was going on, and a lot of patients were extremely upset because it was the first, and a lot of them come in on that date. We have a compassionate care program, so a lot of them get discounted or free cannabis. People have seizures. There was a lot of, it was very sad, and but they were troopers. And so we were trying to send people over to the other dispensaries in Eureka that were open. We were trying to go for a little bit more of an advanced permitting. Also, they went for dispensary, and we were going for a micro business because we also have a grow on site. But then we were open, and then we could only open for medical, and it took another 4 days before we could open for recreational.
How did you find that whole process?
slow and scary and expensive. Yeah. And my staff was very concerned. Patients were very concerned. We hadn't not done adult use before, so we hadn't dealt with the adult use population. And so we are very concerned about the medical side of it. That's all we've known. That's all we've done. So that was hard. But yeah, we're open now and we're really super busy. We have both going on. We're doing an expansion, which is slower than anticipated, but eventually we'll be able to handle that. And the other dispensary in Arcata is not open right now, and they would be taking on some of their patients, and we're taking care of them until they can get up and running.
Yeah, everybody has to cooperate.
For sure.
And Chris, what about, how long ago did you start your dispensary up there in Salem?
October 9th, 2010 is when we opened.
October 9th, that's a good date.
Yeah, it was interesting. We really didn't have a lot enabling us to actually open dispensaries. It was more of a just try it and see if we go to prison kind of deal. So for the first little while, it was pretty sketchy. And then under the Obama administration, we'd receive letters from Eric Holder saying they're going to shut us down, which I'm sure you saw some of those as well. Yep. And once the Cole memo came out, everything really changed. And, you know, our state finally progressed to allow recreational.
What year was that?
2016. Okay. October 2016 is when early sales started. And then it was kind of a ploy to get people from the black market. The law didn't state that they could actually come in until 2017. But they started early just to try to keep people from going to the black market and get accustomed to actually going to a dispensary. Sales tax at that point was 25%. Now it's 17% for the state. And then each city and county can add a 3%. So it can only max out at 20%.
Oh.
So that's nice, you know, because, I mean, you have some states that are 30%. You know, Colorado does a tax-free day every once in a while just to try to move people back from the black market to, you know, actual, you know, retail. So, I mean, it's interesting. Our states changed a few things. They bogarted all of the sales tax for about a year and just finally released about three-quarters of it, not all of it. So we've ran into some issues. It hasn't been a smooth rolling out, but they've actually worked with us quite well.
What are they doing with the tax money? Do citizens know that?
Yeah. It was actually written in the original law when people voted on it. 40% goes to education, 20% to mental health, alcoholism, and drug addiction, 15% to like the Oregon State Police, 10% to cities, 10% to counties, and 5% for drug abuse prevention. So, like last year, we got $34 million went to, well, this was just released in October, finally after a year and a half. $34 million went to education, $17 million to alcohol and drug services, $12.75 million to state police, and $4.25 to the Oregon Health Authority for early prevention for minors.
So $70 million.
Yeah, and that's excluded. I couldn't find the city and counties. That was kind of a weird rollout. They changed the law halfway through, so they stopped the money going out and then are changing it from based on your city's and county's population to actually just dividing it up equally between the cities and counties.
So it took a while for them to do that.
Yeah, OLCC, it wasn't a colleague of mine, Anthony Johnson, wrote the bill, and when it was implemented, it really it had no funding for the OLCC, who was our governing body for Oregon. The Oregon Liquor Control Committee took regulation of it. So there was no budget for them, so they actually had to hold all the money, figure out how much they're going to need to roll out the program, and then release it after that. So they're about short $4 million of the original estimate. So, I mean, a little didn't go to where it was supposed to, but most of it has. And I mean, Oregon voters are real happy with the way it's been rolled out, and the money's actually going where we were promised it's going to go.
That's what I was going to ask you. Are the voters happy?
Definitely.
Sometimes they can be very impatient, you know, when you're trying to roll things out.
Well, actually, I've met more police that are happy about everything than anything. They say it frees up a lot of time and money and effort that can go to more pressing problems than, you know, marijuana. I mean, like most officers say, you know, with the uprise in heroin addiction, you know, they were seeing, you know, their efforts stifled by focusing on marijuana, you know, under medical law, because, you know, they wanted to make sure you didn't have too many plants or anything. They said they'd rather be busting, you know, heroin dens and, you know, drug dealers and stuff of real drugs. So it's been interesting. I'd say the police are the most outspoken out of anybody.
Well, yeah, because they have quite a big job to do.
Yeah.
So I just want to remind you to listen to Thursday Night Talk here on KHSU. I'm Brenda Starr, your host this evening. My guests are Mike Wilson, Mary Ellen Jerkovich and Chris Oss, and we're talking about Proposition 64 and the price of pot. So there's also a county card, and I don't know if this is done in Oregon as well, where if so you have your recommendation from your doctor, and that sufficed when we had Prop 215. That sufficed for you to be able to purchase your medical cannabis. And now, to preclude medical people from paying taxes, some of the taxes, say, we'll go back to Oakland as an example. There, it's 10% if you're just an adult user. It's only 5% if you've got your medical card. The card is up to the municipality to decide how they're going to do it and how much they're going to charge. In our county, it's $100, and that's for a year. You still have to have your recommendation, and then you have that $100, and that precludes you from some taxes. Now, Mary Ellen, do you know what those taxes are? Do you have to include them in your product? Because some dispensaries are adding all those taxes up, and that's the final product. How are you working
so that? How we've always run the sales taxes, we've included in the price. Right now, we put the price down, and then we add the sales tax so you can see all the different taxes that are coming on. We have an 8.50% sales tax in the city of Arcata, and then the state tax is 15%. If you do go get your county card, you can not pay the 8.5%, which the sad part about that is that sales tax that would go to our city. And our city is using that money towards services to take care of us. You know, we have the police and the streets and all the other things that go into paying that. So that's too bad they didn't take it off the 15%, because I think we need our sales tax. And we've been paying a lot of sales tax into Arcata, and we're proud of the fact that we do that. So that was kind of a sad thing. I think also getting a county card, you can also get it cheaper if you are like on Medi-Cal or something. I think you can get it for $50.
Yes, the card itself.
Mm-hmm. And so we have not seen a lot of people getting it at all. People say they don't like to be on a registry with the county. There's a lot of reasons that they... some people have guns, and there is a question about guns, and they're worried that they're going to cross-check their guns with their cannabis.
There's no cross-checking. But I know.
Nobody's very trusting for maybe some obvious reasons. I'm not sure. So anyway, there's all of that. So it's we're having a lot of complaints about the 15%. In places like Oregon, they don't charge. The tax isn't the same for the cannabis medical as it is for the recreational. And here they just made it for both. And people are upset about that. A lot of people that are not well don't have money to be adding extra money onto the top. It was already expensive.
So you think that's why part of the medical card from the county is to try to preclude people from having to pay extra taxes, but yet the 15% is higher than paying taxes here locally.
It's high.
Well, I have a question around that. If any of our listeners have the answer to this, and I don't know if you do, Mike, but the card itself, when you go to fill out for the card, it's kind of touted as, well, you know, your name's not on the card, so you are anonymous. There is no, you know, back-checking this, that, and the other. Well, then what is the card good for? Don't you have to show your license when you go to the dispensary? So there's your name right there. So that part I didn't quite get.
I really don't have an answer for you on the details of identification related to the card. Sorry. I mean, yeah. I did hear from the our health department that there is a uptick in the number of people this last week. It's starting to move up in terms of people applying, and they actually have a bit of a backlog in terms of applications for these cards. So, but the... If you're asking me about the details about identification, I haven't delved into that one.
And the $100 that you pay for the year, maybe part of that is that's local, so that's local tax. So so people might not be paying that 8.5%.
I think that's a fee related to basically processing.
So does that go into the general fund, do you think?
I think it's to the department for processing the card.
Yeah, okay.
I'm pretty sure.
All right. Michael, do we have a text call?
Yes, we did. It was from Nick. So thanks, Nick, for texting in. And he wanted to know what the retail price on a pound of cannabis would be. And I'd like to add on to that. And if that's even possible to do, if you can even buy a pound.
An ounce a day, I believe.
You can only get an ounce a day. Yeah.
Well, how about
how can you possibly survive on that?
How much? Well,
say the eighths are $40 an eighth, then you would add on the 15% because the 8.5% is already included in the price.
Okay.
So, and then there could be lower prices, there could be higher prices depending on if there's specials of the day or if it's a top shelf item.
It's funny, Nick, that you asked that question, because a lot of people will do the numbers this way. They'll think, okay, what is the price? Well, at the dispensary, you can find anything from $10 to $17 a gram. So let's take $15 a gram as an example. So an ounce would be $476. A pound would be $7,616, where the grower is saying they're only getting $1,100. Number one, you can't buy a pound. You can't buy a pound there. The 700% markup between the medicine and the recreational is what people are taking notice of. I just wonder if that's a real argument, though, when you can't buy that much to begin with.
Well, you can't buy that much, but also there's going to be a lot of extra costs now. Like right now, for the last 3 years, we have been having all of our products be required to be tested before they come in, terpene tested as well as other testing. And that's going to be luckily required by the state, but it's also going to be very expensive. It's going to be about $900 a pound to have things. Well, it's going to be $900 a batch. So right now, say we grow a lot of different strains under each, like one strain under each light, we would be required to pay about $900 for each, say, pound that grows under that light, unless we were growing everything the same way. There's a lot of issues with a lot of the costs that are coming in. We're now required to have security guards on our property, which is never been required by the city of Arcata. Those are all added costs. There's a lot more people coming into the dispensaries now. We need to hire more people. The state, the fees are going to be exorbitant. Just to get permitted through the city of Arcata, you know, they have a fee. There's a lot of taxes that are going on right now in the world of cannabis that we didn't have quite before.
And is that the way it was in Oregon as well?
As far as
the taxes, I mean, as you started, because do you produce at your dispensary or you just
We have to have it retail? Separate. Yeah, I actually own 45.5% of a grow and then also have a dispensary as well.
Is that on the same site?
No, we can't. They have to be separate.
Oh, okay.
That's one bad thing about our law. But back what you're talking about earlier on recreational, I checked, and last year we sold, 90.3% of our business was recreational, and then only 9.7% was medical. And that's after a year and a half of being into the program. We started to see that switch where, in the beginning, it was probably, you know, two-thirds rec, third medical. And a lot of actual card service places have went out of business. Mama's was, like, one of the original in Oregon, and they actually just condensed down from 3 to 1, and they're probably one of the only ones left in Oregon. It's just kind of being phased out. Hmm. It's interesting.
Well, if you also have a question, feel free to call us at 826-4805. If you're at the area, 800-640-5911, and you can text like Nick did at 492-5478. So the control, the regulation, the taxes. Sometimes when we go from one thing to another, and if it's we're not talking about cannabis, it can be really tricky. It's a tricky process, and as you experience this, you're seeing more and more, as you said, then there's going to be this, then there's going to be that, then there's going to be another. In the meantime, how do you keep the essence of what you started? Let's talk about your inception, how you got to be at where you're at, and how that was for you.
Well, in the very beginning, we just had our own little garden, and we weren't allowed to have any other products. The city of Arcata only let us sell what we grew. And then we've grown into having lots of products and lots of vendors, which we won't be having vendors any longer. We'll be required to get everything through distributors. Lori Ajax, that is in charge of the BCC, she is from the ABC, the Alcohol and Bureau, and so she's running it a lot like that. So we all vendors will be required to get distributors, which is another added cost. Some of them are charging 25% to 35% to move product, an added very large cost. Like, we're talking about the county costs, we're talking about state costs, now we're talking about moving product cost. There's just cost on top of cost on top of cost. It's going to be interesting to see how it works out. We're already hearing a lot of vendors that we had before are not getting permitted any longer. It's too cumbersome. A lot of growers also are not going to be able to grow to the standards that the state's going to require for testing. It's very, very strict. They don't feel that they can grow cannabis and not use certain kinds of products to get it to market.
So is it a difference between when you were selling just medical? Everybody was still worried about what was in there. You were still testing. Is there different tests that you have to do now that it's adult use recreational?
It's just going to be more. The testing labs are going to be required to do a deeper test, more testing, more things they're going to try to find in the cannabis. I think it's a really good thing. We've been a drop-off spot for testing for years, and the reason I started requiring it a few years ago is because we started seeing really bad test results coming back in from the growers, and we've tried to help. Say for a long time, like, if you want to sell to us, you're going to have to clean it up. So we really feel like we've had some really great success. This is, for us, been a medical product. People are using it. They have compromised immune systems. They definitely don't need to get sicker from using product like this. So that's just been my thing at our place. So I've been really happy. And also to find out about the terpenes, we can say that things are high THC. We talk about the THC and say two things could be 25% and they seem to affect you differently. Well, you really want to know what the terpenes are, because one could have myrcene, which is going to be more of a put you to sleep, and then lemonade puts you more uppery. Those are going to be required by the state now. So I always am going to feel that this is about health. I don't really even like the term rec. I think that it just should be about using a healthy product however you decide to use it. If you need to use it because you want to come home and relax instead of having a drink, I think that that's a good thing. And so we're just always going to be the same. We have a nurse on staff. We're opening a wellness center in Eureka at the old Bank of America building. That's the way I'm staying. That's the only way I've known to be. And I think that will be our niche, is that we are going to be about health and we're not slinging things.
Now, you say you test on site, so you have your own test?
Oh, I'm sorry. We don't test on site. We are a drop-off for a testing lab.
So you coordinate with a local lab?
There is a local lab that just came on board recently.
I'm wondering how many are there?
There's
if everybody
two now.
Has to do this.
There's two now. They are going to need to go through the state to get certified to be able to do that, and it's supposedly very difficult. But we do have one in Eureka, and we have one that we've been using in Arcata. But normally we've been sending them to out of town. And they have a pickup. And then we have patients that have brought in their samples, and they get them tested, and we see the results as they come back.
So is this something that we want to look into, or is going to be... Oh, we have two off-air callers. Off-air.
If you can finish that thought first.
No, that's fine.
Okay. Well, first call was from Jack in Arcata, and he wanted to know... the group's opinions on industrialization and of processing, and was concerned about companies, for example, the Mercer Fraser Project, which is the extraction plant for those who don't know, or this prospective extraction plant, and how close that is to the Mad River. And he was concerned about things like damaging waterways and environment and stuff like that.
Sure. Maybe I can talk or speak to that. So there's one of the permits that's, you know, being requested. Just so we kind of get a framework on that, you know, I think basically the county has approved maybe already 140 cannabis production and manufacturing and dispensary permits total. There's 360 that are interim. The state has approved, I think, 740 some odd licenses, of which 186 of those are in Humboldt County. So Humboldt County has 25% of the state's permits currently. So surprisingly, second place is Santa Barbara with 20%. I know.
That's very interesting.
Yeah, that was an interesting factoid I found today. So that was, and what's even interesting is, you know, we're kind of looking at, you know, in total, when you actually pull it up in acreage, we're talking like 100 acres in Humboldt County, where Santa Barbara's looking at like 200 acres.
Wow.
In sort of their projection.
Predominantly indoor, or they do
I don't know what that is for. I'm going to guess that it's probably greenhouses, maybe. And so I just, you know, just in, so we still have permit requests coming in, and this one that's being referenced here, this Mercer Fraser one, is one where the company Mercer Fraser has property. It is located on the Mad River. It has been ag for a long time, but they've been doing industrial activities on it, non-conforming industrial activities, for longer than we've had general plans. Next door to that piece of property is the property owned by our Humboldt Bay Municipal Water District, where one of our wells for, you know, some 80,000 people or so have their drinking water. And so really this is a question of land use planning. How do we feel, or what do we believe is the right thing with relationship to industrial uses next to your water sources? You know, if you didn't have an industrial use there and someone asked you to put one there, you would think that was a crazy idea. And so now what's being asked to do is to add another industrial use onto this already somewhat inappropriately cited activity, which is next to a municipal water source. This is not, it's not just any municipal water source. This is a municipal water source for Arcata, Blue Lake, McKinleyville, Fieldbrook, Eureka, Cutton, Fields Landing, and King Salmon. So it's interesting. A lot of folks are asking about it from areas where they drive by and see it, and it's and yet it's the same impact to drinking water would be felt to people in Eureka as well. And the other part about this is it's in a floodplain, and so, you know, citing industrial activities in floodplains is generally something that's you know, in other parts of the state and the country you would veer away from. But we've had this long-term use that's been industrial there, like I said, longer than we've had general plans. So the question is, you know, do we allow these sorts of things to continue? Do we expand upon the uses that maybe we wouldn't necessarily have there to begin with? So those are the kind of those bigger questions. And so when someone asks us about industrialization, I mean, there are industrial components to processing cannabis now. It's just the question of whether it's a land use question of where is an appropriate place to have those things. And that's what's being asked in this question, or in this thing. And our planning commission approved that with a 3-2 vote with two abstentions, because it's a 7 person body. And that particular project will, I don't know when that's going to come to our board. It's being appealed by the water district, and so that'll be coming to our board. And so, yeah, I mean, I hope that sort of helps clarify that a little bit.
Do you allow grandfathering under California law with marijuana? I know in Oregon, because it's not federally legal, you can't be grandfathered in technically.
I'm not quite clear what you mean by grandfathering, because there's not currently a marijuana use there now. So this would be grandfathering in just industrial.
Industrial.
Yeah, and I don't.
But since it's for marijuana, I mean, are
because it's marijuana, it definitely crosses a lot of boundaries, to be quite honest, it plays into environmental issues. It plays into our culture war issues for sure, and this is not going to be uncontroversial. It's already a big issue. There's another proposal for something similar in Willow Creek as well. But, you know, this isn't the only non-conforming, inappropriately placed land use that we have issues with in Humboldt County. It's just that when we start talking about our drinking water source for tens of thousands of people,
it's a hot topic.
This is the core of why we have land use planning. This is, you know,
to conserve what we have.
Yeah, to protect these values, and so this is a good topic, and
People actually have input to that. You know, opposed to feeling like it got out of control with some of the bigger grows, you have no control over who goes to see them.
Right.
You have no control over the damage that's been done, but you can show up at a meeting and talk about how maybe some production is going to, you know, inhibit what are the values of the community.
Right. And it's interesting too, because right now our planning commission is really flooded with cannabis permits. And so this was kind of in a big block of cannabis permits going through. So when people saw it, I mean, it's very interesting. I mean, it really didn't become sort of blow up as an issue until like the day it was on the docket, you know. And that had a lot to do with the fact that, you know, generally speaking, the people who are interested in these subjects and who are reviewing these things in the public, from the public side, not necessarily from the permitting side, are just kind of overwhelmed. Yeah. There's just and I would say the planning department's overwhelmed too. So I encourage people to, you know, stay involved and follow along for sure. And this won't be the only land use issue that we deal with. We're dealing with land use issues related to, you know, our timber production and cannabis and our ag lands and cannabis and the interfaces with our urban and rural environments. So we have areas, say down in Fortuna area, where, you know, they were zoned as ag. And they're really kind of like hobby farms, you'd call them. So they're like 5 acres, 10 acres, those sorts of things, where people really are generally more residential, but they're ag zones. And when the original ordinance went through, and I wasn't on the board at that time, you know, it allowed for cannabis in ag. But what happened was that they just didn't account for the fact that that was really actually next to where people are residing, not farming. Like, they're not used to actually having that type of farming next door to where they are. So this is kind of, you know, we're in a flux currently. I mean, we've been talking about, you know, legalization for 30 years, and now it's coming at us like a freight train, right? You know, and we've been asking for it and asking for it, and now we're just, you know, basically assembling the airplane while flying, as they say. You know, we hear that a lot in this. And it's really, really true. And Humboldt County is ahead of things in a lot of ways relative to a lot of other counties. And they're looking to us to be the leader in a lot of these things. But at the same time, we're making a lot of the mistakes. So there are a lot of counties are sitting back and watching Humboldt County, you know, have its struggles to adapt and evolve to the new reality. It's not easy, for sure.
And that's why this state, we look at Oregon, we look at Colorado, as far as the success and then also the missteps that were made and mistakes. I mean, how can you not? I like flux. That's a nice four-letter word.
Yeah, Colorado really had it the worst. They were the first ones, you know, and now Oregon went off of Washington and Colorado because they're both before us, you know, and you're going off of us three, you know, and it's just going to be continually evolving until federal decriminalization happens.
That's true.
And we actually have a nationwide standard instead of state to state.
And we have a very different culture in Humboldt County related, or even in California, but in the Emerald Triangle relative to cannabis. So where the other states moved forward, you know, they had didn't have the same 30 years of culture and drug war that we have. We still have sort of a PTSD related to that. We still have issues of what's legitimate, who's legitimate, whose family is this.
And the suspicions, you know, as you were talking
about. And just we still have a lot of those layers and filters. It's interesting, you know, as a father, and my kid is 16 years old or 17 now, my oldest anyway, and to hear that youth talk about an issue that when I was 16, I mean, we had helicopters flying around and, you know, with people jumping out of them with guns and that sort of thing. They look at the way we talk about it in almost like, you know, like, why are you, what are you?
so foreign to them.
It's foreign, the way we relate to it. And legalization is just, we still carry a lot of that baggage. And some of it's, I think, maybe okay, and some of it's maybe a little archaic. So
under the new administration, you can't be too cautious or nervous.
Yeah. No. Well, even after in the past administration, a lot of dispensaries in Oakland got busted. So you never know. We have Jake from Eureka. Jake, welcome to Thursday Night Talk.
I'd like to pick up on the federal question. Attorney General Jeff Sessions has already announced that he's already ordered law enforcement officials to start cracking down on states that have legalized marijuana. And of course, the current administration's position is the exact opposite of Barack Obama's position, which was to respect the will of the voters in states that had legalized through the democratic process. Of course, Jeff Sessions has no respect for the voters, neither does Donald Trump. And since it appears to be likely that they're going to come here and start arresting people, and the most high-profile arrest would be the dispensaries themselves, shutting down the dispensaries, arresting people who work there, arresting owners of the facilities. What sort of legal precautions have the dispensaries taken? And even more importantly, what sort of, you know, plan of action do the Board of Supervisors have? Is there some sort of plan that you guys have to protect local business owners and consumers when the feds come here and start arresting people?
Do you want to take the dispensary part first? And
Well, you know, we've always been afraid that we're going to get busted. I mean, this isn't the first time we've had an attorney general that has threatened us in the time I've been there. We just try to stay in compliance as good as we can. We have lawyers. We're hoping the state now is in more aligned to protect us because, of course, they are putting together a huge amount of resources to put guidelines together, and they're expecting a multi-billion dollar industry to support their needs. So I try not to be too fear-driven, and otherwise, for the past 12 years, I would have more gray hair than I have right now. So,
So from the county perspective, I mean, that letter came in a few weeks ago, or maybe a little longer than that, and basically, what's happened is the county councils that have interest in this, and I mean not just Humboldt County, but counties throughout the state, those county councils are convening to work collectively to find, you know, to figure out what the best response is. So to the simple answer to your question is no, there's not a plan to respond to that currently, but the legal departments of the counties that have interest in this are working on it.
Well, that's good to hear. I hope they get the work done soon because they may need to get it done soon. And my concern is if the local government, you know, unfortunately is back in the position of just putting their hands up and saying, look, there's nothing we can do about it. Federal law takes precedence over state law. I'm really concerned that the local community is going to be very, very upset if that's the case. They're going to want to see their local government stand up for them and at least try to do something to protect them.
Well, Jake, maybe something to help you feel better is that attorneys general from 17 states this week, including Guam and District of Columbia, call for legislation to legalize banking for companies were legally sold. I think if they start with the money, everything else will follow. It's like hands-off kind of thing.
The banking industry, that's a tough one.
Yeah, well,
under the Cole memo, there's banks that would work with you, but now it's all changed.
So 17 attorneys general. So, you know, getting up there. That could be something that is a little bit of sunshine for the future.
That's important progress. That's good to hear.
Hey, yeah, progress, not perfection. Isn't that what they say? I don't think we can get it perfect unless we have it's nationwide, as many things get to be, but perhaps not in our lifetime. Look, in my lifetime, I didn't even think I'd see it be legalized. So, there you go.
Yeah, we've come a long way, definitely. So let's not regress, which I know is what Jeff Sessions would love to see culturally, politically, et cetera. But just because that guy's in the Attorney General's office at this time doesn't mean he's going to be there this time next year. He may well be in prison, after all.
All right. Well, we'll see about that, Jake. That's another show, too. Thank you for your call. Michael, did we have another text call?
Yes, we did. We had two, actually. One's a little bit more pertinent, though. Just going back briefly to land use, one of our callers just seemed to think that that would be the least of our problems compared to runoff from other industries, such as Blue Lake Casino. Even he seemed to he said that the amount of sewage that runs into the MAD would be much more of a concern than something like marijuana.
Well, I don't know, but Blue Lake Casino is pretty darn green.
Well, there is a treatment plant there, and that treatment plant is highly regulated. And that type of wastewater, I mean, you're talking about nutrients and pathogens, and that's treated. And it's a very different thing than when you're talking about solvents, diesel, basically industrial chemicals.
For sure.
Those are two very completely different things. And location. It has a lot to do with how, it's... the closer you get to your water wells, you get exponentially more risk. And so I would say that's really where you want to concentrate on those things. And then also whether or not you're in the floodplain or not also matters too. And I'm going to say that there's some pretty tall levees around that wastewater treatment plant currently. I haven't seen it flood, so...
Now, the innovation zone in Arcata, is that defined by parcels of land, or is that just a concept?
Okay, I'm not the city of Arcata, so I'll speak a little outside my zone, right? So I'm, the land use issues I deal with are in the county. But as far as what I understand about the innovation zone in Arcata is basically it's an overlay zoning. So you have an industrial zone that has another overlay on top of it that has its own set of rules and regulations associated with cannabis to try and aggregate, to try and put them all sort of in the same location so that you concentrate not only the impacts you might have, so it's more controllable, but also to co-locate businesses that may actually benefit from being next to one another. So like a business park that has like a focus, and you'll see that you'll have technology parks, you'll have parks sometimes even related to, say, like aquaculture, where you have similar infrastructures co-located. This is sort of that same idea. It's like co-locating these businesses in a place where they can be close to one another from a business perspective, but also from an impact perspective, too, to kind of make other areas feel like they may not have get those impacts. So I think does that answer your question? Or?
Yeah, well, I always like the theory behind it, where you can have production and kitchen and testing facilities all kind of, located in general areas.
Right.
Have other towns and cities in Humboldt County considered something like that?
Well, I know Rio Del has a project like that or is talking about that, and I can't speak for them either, so...
Well, it comes with its own set of circumstances,
right,
and problems and issues.
Right. Well, I mean, and to look at like Arcata, they did like the food works area where they had a whole section of their industrial park where they co-located a lot of food based businesses, and they were able to co-locate and use, the infrastructure related to, refrigeration and those sorts of things. So.
And what would you like to add here, Chris, being here and finding out that you're actually
You're very blessed to be in the Oregon program instead of here.
Hey.
Honestly, it seems like you all have to deal with like a lot more than we did. Our permit process is really easy, streamlined. It's only $5,000 for a permit to grow, 10,000 square feet or a dispensary for 5,000. I don't know. It's going to be interesting to watch y'all grow. You're what, the fourth largest economy in the entire world in California? Right. So it's
merely the sixth.
Sixth.
Well, I think the pre-establishment of an industry that was hidden in the hills, right? And so it has its own set of environmental issues and impacts associated with that. We're not starting from ground zero. We're readjusting a well-established subculture.
You're doing an audible. Y'all have been doing this for a long time.
Right. But yeah, the difference is that, it was established from its own land use perspective under the veil of illegality, right? And now that it's legal, do those same things even apply? Does it even make sense to pay to be out in being in a rural environment actually costs more than it does being near where people are. One of the switches on that, though, has a lot to do with this testing issue, which is some counties are finding that they want to move into cannabis where they can't because to co-locate in their ag lands where they're using a lot of pesticides and herbicides is making it really, really difficult for them to do so. And so some counties are really talking about if they're going to move into cannabis, are they thinking about maybe actually regulating herbicides and pesticides in order to protect that value that they have?
Well, in Oregon, they allowed hemp growing, which anyone knows if you grow outdoor and you grow hemp, you're going to have seeds, So it's always this continuing battle of
science and biology.
Exactly. And who's going to win? Yeah.
So not are we having a shift of culture. We're just, the economics of it are changing dramatically. We're even having some local growers that this year tried dry farming, and they were really successful. And it was really hard for them not to water their plants. It was very hard for them not to add nutrients and those sorts of things. But it turned out that it worked out really well. And so for those few folks that tried that, and so they're really thinking about that as maybe a new model for them because...
Well, cost a gram goes down to produce. I mean, it's economical for the grower.
Right. It's definitely has a... It's just like it's a different methodology and the economics are different. So we'll see.
A lot better for the land and the pocketbook.
Yeah, well, we live in an area where between Humboldt County and Mendocino, we kind of created the whole organic farming thing. So you figure if we did that, we certainly can figure this out. But then you have people that still want their top grade organic sun-grown Humboldt County Sensimilla grown by small farmers. And
just like craft beer.
That's right. Except that we still do, right? At your dispensary, you can find that and you can get all those variables.
At certain times of the year.
Yep. It's an ongoing conversation, community, county, and government, and how do we all work together? How do we make things make sense? It's the beginning part of a conversation. I want to thank my guests this evening. Chris from Oregon.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you so much, Mary Ellen. It's nice to meet you in person. And our third district county supervisor, Mike Wilson. Thank you so much. I want to thank the callers. And you, particularly you, the listener. I'll be back next month. And until then, peace, frog.
You've been listening to Thursday Night Talk on KHSU. Thank you to our host, Brenda Starr, and to our guests, Mary Ellen Jerkovich, Chris Oss, and Mike Wilson. We love to get feedback on our programs. Please email ThursdayNightTalk@khsu.org and like our Facebook page, Thursday Night Talk on KHSU. Sharon Fennell hosts the next episode of Thursday Night Talk. Thanks to KHSU Thursday Night Talk producer Geraldine Goldberg. Our theme music is composed and performed by Jeff Kreider. My name is Michael. I've been your studio engineer tonight. Stay tuned to KHSU. No Room for Squares is coming up next.
The State of the Union Address.
We must look not only at where we are and where we're going, but where we've been.
In the words of our founders,
to form a more perfect union.
They've done so during periods of prosperity and tranquility. And they've done so in the midst of war.
Our resolve is firm and our union is strong.
It's President Trump's turn Tuesday. Live coverage from NPR News.
That's Tuesday night from 6 to 8 here on KHSU.
Thank you for listening to KHSU. All of us, volunteers and staff, national producers and reporters, do this for you. You are the public in public radio. Thank you for listening.